The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. It's Monday, June 28th, and we've got a ton of great basketball stuff to talk about. We're also going to be joined by our good friend Mike Malloy, sometimes of Twitter, currently banned. He's like the wildfire season boards that it's like high risk, low risk. He has that for banned from Twitter. He just like, today I'm banned from Twitter. As always, Jenkins and Jones is hosted by my good friend Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, everybody, how's it going?
And LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, bubbas?
I am Mike, a.k.a. Guardy B. Before we start talking about basketball, my family went to Disneyland twice this week. My mom's in town. We had, like, her whole family. We had, like, 10 people over in the house today. The world is reopening. How are you guys doing mentally? Are you doing things out in the world again? Are you still feeling weird about it? Where's everyone's heads at on the podcast?
It's, you know, the reverting back to normalcy is cool, especially since we're, you know, me and the missus are vacuumed up and shit out here. But it's like, you know, we're still taking these precautions, bro. Like, we're still masked up. Like, when we go to a restaurant, please do not see the motherfucker next to us. You know what I mean? Like we're still very much moving cautiously, even though we're happy to get back to, you know, a little bit of normalcy.
Rather just got, you know what I'm saying, her second vacuum yesterday. But we eat outdoors if we go out and, like, mask up everywhere. I might be masked for the next 10 years when I'm around strangers. You feel me? Like, you know what I mean? But, like, that Delta variant, nigga. Hey, bruh. That Delta variant shit ain't sweet. So, like, you know, I'm still taking precautions, you know what I mean? Now, my lady Prego, nigga, you know what I mean? Like, I will fight the fuck out of COVID, nigga.
Punch COVID in
I'm trying to stomp the fuck out of that bitch. And the only way I can do it is by wearing a mask. So that's what I'm on.
They don't ever need to seat anyone next to my wife and I again. We can just do away with.
Let's keep that going. I enjoy that very much.
Sardine can.
I miss the movies and shit, though, right? Like, I miss the movies. The things that I want to enjoy. And I'm not really going to go, you know, to the movies and, like, wear a mask the whole time. You know what I mean?
So, you know, we rented a movie. I think I told you guys this. The first movie we went to see, we rented a movie theater. So we had, like, a dozen of our friends who were vaccinated, who also had gotten both doses. We went and saw it. I think this week we're going to go see our first movie in a movie theater. Like, just general admission. We'll see.
Are you wearing masks? How do you feel about the Delta variant? Yeah, okay.
We take everything serious. We've got, you know, my wife's not pregnant, like, in your situation, but we do. Our kids won't be able to get vaccinated till the fall or whenever they approve it. So, yeah, I mean, I did my grocery shopping. I still put the shit on. I mean, it doesn't really bother me all that much at this point, to be completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. I just got used to it. Covering games outside when it would be cold sucked because my glasses would fog up fucking nonstop when it was cold. But, like, movie theater, whatever else, I'm fine just wearing it when I'm not eating food. That doesn't bother me at all.
The trick to that is putting the glasses over.
No, there's no trick. It's just, it doesn't. I mean, I tried every fucking thing in the world. You know what I mean? I tried the tape. I tried the repositioning. It's the beard.
Scotch tape on the mask, nigga.
Okay, I did. Okay, I tried it, though, because it was I'd be at a football game and I'd just be like, whoa. Like,
hey, the beard gang motherfuckers was looking really weird with that motherfucker on and that fucking beard sitting out, dog, up under. Y'all was struggling out here trying to figure out how to stuff that beard in that mask, dog.
Struggled for quite a bit.
But you know what? I feel like there weren't any movies that dropped during all this that I was like, oh, I have to see that in the theater. You know what I mean? I've always said this. If this shit had came in spring 2019 instead of spring 2020 with Endgame, right? Like,
seeing Endgame.
Right, motherfuckers getting told you can't see Endgame. Bro, we might have been rioting out this motherfucker. Like, hey, seriously, bro. Like, yeah.
We talked about, you know, what are you willing to die over?
niggas
would have been in Endgame. Niggas would have been in Endgame.
I might have risen for Endgame. I'm not gonna lie to you, bro. I might have been in there masked up, like, please don't let this shit take me out. But I might have, I'd have been in that motherfucker.
I'm not gonna lie to you. There's no might. There's no might whatsoever for me. We saw that shit at like 10 p.m. Thursday night with like 25 of our friends, bro. Like, there's no way I would have sat that out for a year.
You're not watching HBO on Max. You're not doing
fuck,
that.
Get the fuck out of here. 27 movies deep.
You got a 60-inch TV, Mike. Come on, that motherfucker, curve on it, man.
65 inches. No, 75. We got the 75, my brother. 60 inches was, me. You know, that was pre, that was Patreon, Mike. You talking to at that time.
The volume, Mike, is different.
All right, let's get into it. Bucks, Hawks tonight. Certainly looked for most of the game like that was going to go the Hawks way. They were going to go up 2-1 instead. The Bucks go on a 30-17 run after Trae Young stepped on a ref's foot and turned his ankle.
Arrest that man.
The Bucks are up 2-1. Your thoughts, John.
Arrest the fucking ref. Put him up under the jail.
Trae's way.
We don't want this. Chris Middleton is the hero instead of Trae Young in 2021. This feels very 2020-ish. You know what I mean? Like, dog, I mean, I mean, the Bucks are good. I really don't think the Hawks can pull it off. We talked about this. You know what I mean?
Are we all back to thinking that this is it for the Hawks?
This is the thing. If it's a close game, if the Hawks win, like, it's probably a 1 or 2 point game. If it's a double-digit game, it's the Bucks. You know what I mean? Like, and when Trae Young went down, like, Gallinari, he's going to hold us down, but I love the Hawks. They got some dudes that are just buckets. I said on Twitter that they give me, you know, very, you know, much so like Jordan shorts under the jeans vibes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, missing lunch, you know, going to the gym, hooping.
It's
vibe.
Them and the Suns both give me that
for
vibe.
Sure, for
just
sure.
Dudes who like playing basketball, who would play basketball on the blacktop. Like, yes.
But like, you know, I love to see it, but I don't think they got it. You know what I mean? But it's they're fun. Trae is so fucking god. I need a jersey. When the shorty is born, we're a Trae Young household. I'll tell you that. You know what I mean? When Bron retires, of course.
Yeah. What's the opposite of counting a team out? Counting a team in? Because I will never count a Mike Budenholzer coach team in until the last whistle on the, you know, series locking up game. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, of course, we got to see what's going on with Trae. We got to see if he's going to be, you know, 100% moving forward here. But, I mean, you know, a 1-2 hole, that's not, you know, unsurmountable. I'm not burying the Hawks just yet.
It's a 1-2 hole, but the Bucks are better. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like, and then what are they going to do with Giannis? They're not even double teaming him. He's just doing whatever the fuck he wants to do once he gets the ball. Like, I just don't know how you approach the Bucks that way. Is like, we'll see what happens with Giannis. Like, nigga, you know, throw some bodies at that motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, crazy.
We had a listener write in quite a while ago that Paul George was the LeBron James of Chris Middleton's. And I would say that at this point, definitively, Chris Middleton is the LeBron James of Chris Middleton's. Looking like a real best case scenario of himself.
Of Chris Middleton's.
You said he was what?
I said Chris Middleton is the Chris Middleton of Chris Middleton's today.
He's better than that.
No, dude. Chris is a buck.
Chris is a buck. On the road, get that man his props.
And he had 20. He had the 38 point game, 20 in the fourth quarter.
Bro,
he went crazy.
He's been carrying. He carries. Like Reggie said it. Reggie be saying some bullshit, but this is not the bullshit. That Chris Middleton is a guy in the fourth quarter. That is the Bucks guy in the fourth quarter. It's been a while. It's been 3 years that Chris Middleton is the dude you get the ball to in moments, and he's been solid, dude. Especially in the playoffs. So
can we start a petition to make the refs stand a little further off to the side and or to get Marv Albert and Reggie Miller the fuck off of this series, bro? It's time.
Get the old man out of the booth, bro. Get him out of there. That motherfucker confused Connaughton and Lopez. That's 100 pounds and a foot of man away from, you know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at it like you said Lopez with the block. Nigga, that Lopez is a totally different species from a Connaughton, nigga. You kidding me?
It's time for Marv to sail off into that sweet sunset, right? And keep it in the buck. You know, we appreciate all you've done, but Mike Breen is that motherfucker, and he's been that guy for about a fucking decade now. We're not gonna miss you too much, Marv, but you know, thanks for your services. It's time to go, man. Wrap it up, dog.
It's time to go.
He's rich as shit too. Like he's selling off into the sunset with the big bag. You know what I mean? He'll be fine. But I just like, dog, like we don't.
He's doing the retirement tour. This is his last series, but it is like this happens with athletes too. It sucks when they're hobbling around at the retirement tour. You know what I mean?
Looking like Paul Pierce out here. You know what I mean? Like you ain't Kobe. You don't get love like that, nigga. You got to go, my nigga. Goddamn. It was four possessions back to back. To back to back. It was four possessions. You know what I mean? Like, where he just like fucked something up. I'm like, this man should not be on national television on conference fucking championships, dog.
And then Reggie Miller picking him up with Chris Middleton, how Stella found her groove back.
What the fuck are we even? What?
He is the most 1996 reference dropping motherfucker. Like, bro, please know your audience. What the fuck is a 19-year-old thinking when they hear that shit? Like I'm still getting how
they had to Google that. Like,
even there, even if it is a good reference, right? The fuck? God
damn, it's a weird default reference for someone's playing well. You know what I mean?
Listen, bro, I'm old enough to know the whole background story of Stella Got a Groove Back. It was a woman in her 40s who went on vacation and was fucking a dude in his 20s. Like how is that? Yeah, you correlating that to Chris Middleton finding his jumper in the fourth quarter, bro? No, man, let's not do that.
Reggie Miller was talking about himself in the third person and he called himself annoying. I thought that was really, that's the one endearing thing he's done is like, you know, talked about himself. Like, no, he knows he's annoying. And he leans into that shit. You know what I mean?
I like Reggie Miller in every capacity other than him being a color commentator for important playoff basketball games. Like, I enjoy hearing interviews with him. I enjoy how much he hypes and gasses his sister up. Like, you know what I mean? I think he's a good dude and everything. I don't know, man. It's just not for me.
He fucked somebody's chick once and refused to give him the fair one. I thought he was bitch made. You know what I'm saying? He didn't shoot the fair one with the dude. The dude pulled up at his crib and he called the police. I'm like,
basketball players don't shoot fair ones like that, dog.
Man, let the man box. I mean, let box, at least box the man if you're going to fuck his chick. You know what I mean? Like
Z-Bo. Let's talk about, do y'all remember when Z-Bo got sued by a dude? Because that dude said Z-Bo beat his ass for a whole summer. He said every time he saw Z-Bo, Z-Bo gave him the beats like four or five times for a whole summer. Like on site for real. There are some real basketball players out here who will shoot the fair one. Reggie just ain't one of those guys.
And hey, he owned that nigga for a summer. That nigga was property. If you beat his ass like that,
like,
bro.
Imagine hopping in your car like, damn, I hope I don't see Z-Bo and have to fight him. And you see Z-Bo and Z-Bo fights you that day. Like, that's distinct possibility that you're living.
This is where you live. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, Z-Bo ass could have been on vacation, but he wanted to be there to beat your ass all summer, nigga. It's really fucked up.
Getting beat up for a season sounds terrible.
Yeah, for a whole season.
Like, here's the summer collection from Z-Bo.
Right. summer collection.
Nigga, goddamn.
A whole fucking 3 months you under pressure. Motherfuckers cooking out, having a good time, and you just looking over your shoulder every chance.
Like, just waiting for that vernal equinox. Right.
Nigga, have you got your issue yet? Goddamn, nigga.
It's September 22nd, Z-Bo.
You still ain't got your issue? Goddamn, nigga. Goddamn, motherfucker. Incorrigible ass nigga. You feel me?
Bro, I'm going to tell you, when I knew Reggie wasn't built for this shit, was when he first hopped on, started commentating like 2011, 2012, way back, and he tried to make "Welcome to your Kodak moment" his catchphrase. I'm like, bro, it's 2011. Motherfuckers got camera phones. What the fuck are you talking about?
Your Kodak got a moment? Are they even in this
anymore? Doesn't exist anymore. What the fuck are you talking about?
Reggie very clearly was watching his own highlights, thinking about calls he would make for those highlights, and they just all stuck in his head. Stella Got a Groove Back. Right. This is how Reggie got his groove back. Fucking Reggie Miller, that's your Kodak moment. Like, he clearly had that in his head, bro.
God damn, Reggie, what the fuck?
Mix in a Fast and the Furious reference.
Every chance he got, man. That's one of the few joys we can take from this.
Throw in an Avengers reference, Reggie. Shit.
Yeah, grow up, man. It's 2 hours.
Please. Growth is important. God damn.
The only other thing to talk about from this Bucks-Hawks game was what that I thought was just the fucking best was the Atlanta crowd counting out seconds for Giannis. That's the most personal shit I can remember a crowd getting into in a minute. That was uncomfortable. That was like Curb Your Enthusiasm. I was like, oh God, you.
How would you deal with that? I'm up there like, especially, go ahead, Tyler, go ahead.
I was going to say, them seconds was fast as fuck. Wasn't that man none Mississippi in between them ones and twos and threes, bro? Motherfuckers were just belting that shit out, dog. Like, but you know, Giannis, there's a clip that I saw where Giannis was talking about, like, bro, I've airball free throws. I've been dunked on. I've been crossed up. He said, I've been down here. The only way to go is here. And I love that about Giannis because he has a short memory. Like, no matter how, listen, bro, like in that game 7 versus KD, he literally, I'm not exaggerating here, literally hit the shot clock on the last shot in regulation, right? And then overtime, he came down and balled, bodied KD in the post for a bucket that put him on top. Giannis has a very short memory, and that's like one of his best attributes.
Giannis, low-key, we talked about like what our personalities would be like in the NBA on the last episode. Giannis might actually be the dude who most has it cracked on the like work-life pro basketball balance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he seems like he has a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
He understands his basketball, and he understands that the money has just been so life-changing for his whole family that it's all, the actual career is just fucking, you know, the whipped cream on top of the milkshake. You know what I mean?
He still feels lucky to be a basketball player, even though he was obviously made to be a fucking Giannis. You know what I mean? His name is Giannis. I think that actually means John in Greek, which is a very basic. Like, a Giannis and a John. I'm a John. I'm a John. That nigga's a Giannis. You know what I mean?
Is that true?
He still feels very lucky.
Is Giannis just Greek John?
I think it's Giannis.
Y'all talk about something while I Google this. Hold
on. Go ahead, bro. Go ahead. Let's tap in. I'm gonna see if I'm correct. I think it does mean John.
Giannis.
It's Giannis.
Well, are you on your phone or are you on the computer?
Greek John. No, I'm on my phone because if I type on the computer, it goes on the podcast.
It's gonna be so wild if this motherfucker
Giannis is a common Greek given name, a variant of John in Hebrew, meaning God is gracious. I did not know this. John
I can't is a, believe, but there but the is fact, a there is a John in the NBA taking two steps to go coast to coast.
But he's like, not a John.
How the fuck is a John doing that?
When I found that out, I was like, this is a, he could not have been a John. If he was born in America, he'd fucking be 6'1", fucking 180 pounds. You know what I mean? And he would have been a great D2 player. You feel me? Like, there's no, like, that's a, he's a Giannis. A John and a Giannis. When I found that out, I'm like, oh, yeah, of course he's a fucking Giannis and not an actual John. They're two totally different people. So a John's not covering the full, three-fourths of the court in two dribbles and a euro. You know what I mean? That's a Giannis doing that shit. But you can tell John, he still enjoys the game a
Giannis
lot.
Giannis from John is, that's a lot of seasoning. Because John is a real... like
basic,
it's a real like, yeah, molded from the clay type of a name. And Giannis is like, who's that? You know,
there's 20 pounds of muscle on Giannis automatically, dog. You know what I mean?
Let's talk about Suns Clippers, the ugliest, like a real throwback monster from the Pistons, long, long Spurs. Ago, lowest scoring NBA game of the season, regular season or postseason. Suns pull it out. Chris Paul being, you know, the guy, DeAndre Ayton, unbelievable. What did you guys think? And how much are we hoping we never see any shit like this again?
I thoroughly did not enjoy that game at all. Like, I tweeted how it felt like church, and that's exactly what it felt like. I was like, bro, when is this over? I'm ready to leave. Like, that's exactly how that game felt to me. That game was church.
That's
like, I was ready to go. Yeah, it was a Bible study ass game, bro. And they kept telling me to go to certain pages when I thought we were done. I was like, God damn, fuck this.
It was that
we don't need this to connect to another passage. We're done. You made your point.
It was that service and went to 2 o'clock. And he was like, God damn, nigga. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you thought this would be there forever. Bro, I tweeted, I was like, this feels like 2004 in all the bad ways. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I never need to see that again. It was hella ugly. They talk about Ayton making, you know, they're like Ayton, you know, he's gonna get paid this summer. I think he has like 2 more years in his contract, but like this motherfucker is looking like a 7-foot Charles Barkley, bro. He's putting up 20 and 20 games like it's nothing. Like 2015, 2018. You know what I mean? Like, this motherfucker is good. You know what I mean? Yeah, but like Booker, I don't think he's lacking confidence, but the last thing you want to do if you're a shooter is think. And he's definitely thinking. And you can tell he's not just playing right now. And they need him to play, especially if they're going against the Bucks in the finals. You know what I mean? Like, for them to win, they need Booker. We saw what it looked like without Booker being Booker. And shit ain't sweet. You know what I'm saying? And nor fun.
I mean, Book might have hit a slump, but there's something to consider here about how the pace has slowed since CP3 came back. And that might be knocking Book off his shit a bit, too. So, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Book breaks out the slump. But, you know, like you said about Ayton, like, what a postseason for him. Like, when we talked to, you know, the new young crop of guys, he wasn't in that conversation at the start of the season. He's in that now, though. When we talk to Tatums, the Lucas, the Bookers, the Jaws, we got to talk Ayton now, too. And that's been, like, he took a leap this postseason, bro. A fucking leap.
Well, he's dominated every big man, every fucking series.
I would also just add that for this series, I think Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton in the pick and roll surgically, that's a better bread and butter than Devin Booker going against a team that actually plays good perimeter defense. You know what I mean? Because the Clippers did not have jack fucking shit. And it felt like for the whole second half, it was the only thing the Suns could make. They got into the high pick and roll and it was just like,
they didn't have answers for campaign either though. You know what I mean? Like Payne cooked they ass when he was getting big, you know, big minutes as well. You know what I mean? Like he was putting up numbers on their ass too. Like, I don't know, but Reggie though, what's his name? Reggie Jackson. Hey, that that man's a hooper, bro. We talked about it. He's gonna get Schroeder's, he's getting Schroeder's bag. Schroeder's bag this offseason, bro. He signed a 1-year deal with them and he bet on himself and he getting it. He getting him that, he think he Kobe. Who used to call that? The dude from USC?
Harrison Barnes.
Get that Harrison Barnes and fall off the end of the earth bag. But he's a dog, bro. I like Reggie. Liked him. You know, he would play too big for his britches sometimes, but I love his confidence. You know what I mean?
I was gonna say Reggie's definitely getting 90 M's from like Charlotte or Orlando out this summer. Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Paul George, bro. I didn't want it to be the first thing we talked about with the series, but like his 11th career playoff game shooting under 25%. He's now 2 off Bob Cousy for the all-time lead in NBA history. I tweeted last night and I meant
your ass, Bob.
Bob can feel his breath on the back of his neck. I tweeted last night. I know you guys don't agree with me. I don't even find this shit funny anymore, bro. The free throws, again, his fucking shoulders like sagging after that first missed free throw in crunch time. And Monty Williams just has him in a torture chamber. He talked about it after the game. I think the analytics math says you start fouling in those situations conservatively at 7 seconds, aggressively at 11 seconds. The Suns started doing it at 17 seconds. And he said it's because we have confidence in Devin Booker and Chris Paul shooting free throws. But what he's also saying is we have confidence that their best player is going to fucking beef it. It sucks, bro. It's just not like, I don't know, man. It sucks. I want this series to be over. It makes me sad. The Paul George shit, I'm having a hard time laughing at it at this point, honestly.
How far are they? I mean, like, this series is so close. It's so far being it's 3-1, but it's so close. There's the two free throws in game 2, you know what I mean? And in game 4, the ball bounced. I mean, dude, anybody could have took that fucking game.
A lob dunk for a win.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh yeah, game four, like, you know, there was it seemed like a year and a half stretch where nobody can get a bucket. You know what I'm saying? Like, dog, it could be 3-1 Clippers that, you know, so easily. But yeah, PG, I don't know what to say about the man. I think everything to be said about PG has been said. You know what I mean? Like, he's just this dude now.
And he's having a great playoffs on the whole. It's just mixed in there is some really excruciating shit, man.
Yeah. It's like he reversed the pandemic P at the worst fucking times when a playoff game is hanging in the balance. It's, you know, he's been unpandemic peeing himself a bit this postseason, but we just still get those moments every now and then. I'm kind of with you where it's like, it's not even funny anymore. Like, oh, we might be battling some real demons out here, bro. We might need to be a bit more kinder. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm with you on that.
But you said it and you were right. You just, like, sometimes the hot take shit is just absolutely correct. You said this preseason, like, the Clippers are going to, the greater the pressure gets turned up, the more reliably Paul George is going to trick it off. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happens. Like, free throw later in the game, the more you just see him, he just doesn't look comfortable. He's not like, right. He's walking to the free throw line because he has to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Chris Paul was like, Jay fucking Crowder, foul me. I want to shoot the free throw.
Right. PG should have been Chris Paul. Jay Crowder, bro. He didn't want to be. He's a guy that has that level of. He just should have been a regular dude. Where if you miss the free throw, nobody cares. If you hit it, everybody loves you. If you miss it, whatever. PG wanted to be him. You know what I mean? A guy. Yeah. He just doesn't have the resolve to be a guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He should have been like George Hill when George Hill missed the free throw. Then we blame J.R. Smith for that shit.
We were happy George Hill hit one. We were just happy George Hill didn't literally throw up on the fucking basketball at the line. You know what I mean? He looked so scared. We felt bad for him that he was in that situation. You know what I'm saying? We forget he missed the free throw. It was all J.R.'s fault. You know what I mean? He should have been that nigga. But no, he wanted to be a dude. And he's a dude.
He wanted to be LeBron instead of George Hill,
right,
bro.
Right, right, right.
There it is.
He wanted to be Chris Middleton. You feel me?
He wanted to be the Paul George of the LeBron James of Chris Middletons. And instead, he ended up as the Chris Middleton of LeBron James's.
We disrespected Chris. He's a Paul George of LeBron James's at this point. Chris out here cooking. Chris out here cooking. Big cooking. You
feel me? Yeah, all Chris right. Cooking like a motherfucker.
Stay tuned. We're back in a second. We're talking to Mike Malloy, one of our favorite comedians on Twitter.com. You know those hot takes you post on social media? Well, now you can win up to $5,000 when you put those takes to the test on FanDuel. It's a new game called Over Under, and it's absolutely free to play on FanDuel. Here's how it works. FanDuel will set lines on things like total points or three-pointers made during every NBA on TNT broadcast. All you have to do is pick over or under for every prop. Your picks could win you a share of $5,000 during every contest. FanDuel is the exclusive home for over under, and it's available in all 50 states, so you can play from anywhere. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/over under and sign up now if you haven't done so already. Just create a new FanDuel account. If you don't already have one, it takes less than 2 minutes to sign up. Then put your takes to the test during every NBA on TNT broadcast at FanDuel.com/over under. They could be worth up to $5,000. Age and local restrictions apply. See FanDuel.com for terms and conditions. All right, we're joined by our special guest, none other than Twitter legend, 7 times banned, the only other white dude named Mike we would allow on the show, Mike Malloy. Faded comedy legend. Mike, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Glad to be here.
So we're plugging. Faded Comedy LA is returning July 9th at the new spot on Melrose. Yep. Go to Faded Comedy. The tickets are probably going to be sold out very quickly, but July 9th, and then they'll be back for their weekly show after that. How happy are you to be back doing shit, dude?
Dog, it's great. I've been stuck in the house for a year and a half just talking to myself, so I've got a lot to say, and some of it's been good. So, you know, we're figuring it out. I was in Denver this week because we just launched Faded Denver there, sold out. It was dope as hell. Got to do a couple shows in Denver, so I'm just kind of relearning how to do stand-up, which is interesting, but it's, like, exciting again. You know, there was kind of towards the a certain point where you kind of like get burned out on it and you kind of like don't appreciate it as much as you should. And now I'm just like, oh, this is fucking ridiculous that I get to do this, that I just get to like talk shit. It's fun.
So Mike, man, you said you're getting back in the groove of stand-up, and I'm always interested in how certain comedians view stand-up. Like, you know, Chappelle has said that he wanted to get his rhythm back by like doing stand-ups. Like, you know, we've all heard about the legendary Chappelle stand-ups where he just pops up in some fucking club in Cleveland and just rocks out for like 3 hours straight, right? Like, and he kind of viewed that as like, you know, getting shots up in the gym as a basketball player. So how do you approach stand-up, and how has it been getting back into the groove of that?
It's been tough getting back into a rhythm just because the shows have been so inconsistent as far as what I'm doing. I've only been back doing it like a month, so, you know, I've probably had like 5 or 6 shows, but, you know, some of them I'm doing 10 minutes, some of them I'm doing 40. So it's just, you know, finding that rhythm, chaining stuff together, testing new shit out. You know, I had 3 shows Saturday night, and, you know, in front of fresh audiences each time. It was 10 minutes each time. So that was like, you know, that was like doing, each one was like a different rep. Like, I got to mix in some different shit, try some different shit out, figure out what works, tweak stuff. But like, by the time that 3rd show came around, you know, obviously it's kind of a little different because the audience for a 3rd show is usually maybe not as great as the 2nd show. But, you know, by that 3rd show, I was kind of like sharpening the tool and making sure it was cutting. So
is that the rule, is that the later it is, the more an audience is just total fucking shit heap or what?
It depends. I mean, for the most part, like, yeah. And it's crazy because Saturday we had, there was a 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock show. And there was a bachelorette party that showed up. And usually those are absolute nightmares at comedy shows because they think that they are the comedy show. And luckily they were on their best behavior. They couldn't have been better, but it's also because they were probably the first stop of this bachelorette party. And then they went and terrorized someone else. God bless them, not us. So it was fine. And there was, I mean, everybody, especially Saturday, or actually, I mean, all the shows, everybody was super respectful. I think everybody's just kind of like appreciative about being back. And I don't think anybody's out by mistake right now. I think anybody that's like going out wants to be out and is like elated to be out.
How does it feel like to bomb a joke, like, or to bomb a set?
Never
like,
happened. Wouldn't know. No, of course.
Never happened. See, like no. Coming back from that has to be somewhat, I mean, is it difficult or is it just like, you know, just like missing? It's like Giannis airballing a free throw. Like, fuck it, I get another one.
So, you know, yeah, I mean? It's same mentality. And, you know, before I, you know, I came from a sports background before doing stand up. So it was, you know, that closure mentality of just like, all right, you know, learn from the thing, but like, don't like let it hang over you, because 90% of the shit's about confidence and just like acting like you know what the fuck you're talking about. So if you can just do that and kind of like, I mean, obviously, like there's something to learn from every set, and, you know, eating shit, you can learn a lot from, probably more than you know, many comics have said that you can learn a lot more from eating shit than you can from having a great set. But I try to avoid it.
That makes sense.
I wanted to ask you, like, in my experience with stand-up comedians, they're never, no one's ever a stand-up comedian because they're like emotionally healthy, right? Like, it's never like everything's great, I'm super well adjusted, so this is what I want to like put myself through all the time. What was a year and a half of not being able to do it like? I mean, you guys were a lot more responsible than other comics, and I appreciated that you didn't do, we're just doing Zoom stand-up for a year and a half. You guys tried interesting shit like the drunk spelling bee. You did different stuff, but it's very different from being in front of a live audience. So just emotionally, what was that like?
Well, a lot of it was just kind of staying sharp and like talking to another person. Like, you know, instead of just putting around the house, talking to myself, saying things to myself, I'm bouncing something off another person. We have a chat that kind of gives me feedback on if what I'm saying is funny or not. So it's not like real time, like laughter, but like I know if what I'm doing's entertaining, sort of, based on the results that we're getting. And, you know, I really liked, you know, yeah, like you mentioned, we pivoted right to, you know, at first we were doing the live streams with just comics talking shit. And then after a while, we were just like, all right, this isn't, I'm bored of this. I've talked to everybody. What else do we want to do? And then we pivoted to the, you know, Faded Happy Hour, where we were having bartenders on. And, you know, we knew how many bartenders were out of work. So we'd have them on, and most of them were making, you know, 100, 200 bucks just coming on the show and teaching us how to make drinks. So it was cool to just kind of like keep that tool sharp and keep talking and, but also like not risking dying over this. None of this seems worth dying over. So I tried to not. There's a lot of people that before this shit started were like, I'd die for this shit. And it's just like, well, then go ahead.
Do it. Yeah, that works out.
It doesn't sound like you have much. It sounds like, you know,
everyone knows what they're willing to die for now. That's like a line everyone now has in their head. Like, am I willing to die to see my mom? Yes. Am I willing to die to go to a no, I don't miss the movies that much. Like,
yeah, and it's just like, you know, right when the shit happened, I know, you know, the tipping point obviously for us was the Gobert thing when they shut down the NBA. We were like, hey, we got to shut this down. Because earlier in the week, I know we had been talking to our venue and being like, hey, like, we're kind of worried about this. And they're like, oh, I don't think you have to worry. And then the NBA shut down and we're like, we're worried. We're canceling the show indefinitely. So
that switch is will be impossible to explain to people 30 years from now. That it was like the day before this started, everyone was like, no, that's not going to happen here, though. And then it happened everywhere in a fucking day. Like,
and it was just like, all right, well, no gatherings over like 200 people. And we were like, all right, well, our show seats 100. Could we do? And then as soon as the NBA shut down, we're just like, this is not responsible. We'll just fucking, we'll wait.
What do you prefer with a set? You said you did 10 minutes and you do like 40 minute sets. You've been doing different, like, you know, time slots. What do you prefer, the short joint or is a long one better? Because for me, if I was on stage, I would try to get up and run the fuck off that motherfucker as soon as possible. You know what I mean? So
feedback comedy.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, the fuck out of there.
Once I'm like in a rhythm, like once I've been back on my grind, I'm sure those longer sets will feel fucking fantastic. Like right before right before the pandemic, I was doing, you know, close to 45 minutes to an hour sets at some places. And, you know, I have hours and hours of material, but it's really a matter of just like remembering sequencing what comes next, what, you know, 90% of the time I go up knowing what I'm going to do at the top and I know what I'm going to do at the end. And the rest, I sort of kind of feel out. I have, you know, shit that I rotate in and out, like of the 40 or, you know, the three shows that I did Saturday, the beginning and the end were the same, but in the middle, I tested out new stuff. I sorted, you know, shuffled in new stuff, see what stuff kind of goes together. Cause it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like, you know, arranging a musical piece. You kind of want things to flow. You kind of want there to be ups and down, you know, you don't want to just be all fucking rapid fire. You don't want it to just be all low energy. Yeah, you know, exactly.
I mean, yeah.
I like that analogy of a musical piece. I haven't heard that before. I mean, people talk about like the narrative structure and shit like that, but that's an interesting point because it is like a different volume of like a different jokes and different kinds of comedy, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably, you know, similar to like arranging an album. You kind of want it to have, you know, a start and a finish, and you want there to be, you know,
you don't want to put four slow songs in a row and then three really fast songs
right.
You fucking people shit up with that. You know, you gotta get, it's about rhythm. It's about, you know, like I said, you know, having confidence up there and just kind of feeling shit out. Cause you know, what's going to work in front of one audience might not always work, but like for the most part, funny is going to be funny. And if it's good enough, it'll work. But then there's also some people that just aren't going to like it. So
how's the experience of like testing that material out? Like, real time, because if you're like a musical artist, you're in a room with a few people. If the shit's trash, they tell you it's trash, and those three people are the only people that know this trash. You know what I mean? If you're in front of like 50 people trying to figure some shit out, that, you know, that seems a little different.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, you know, when you're making music, I'm sure you have a couple people that are, you're bouncing shit off of and making sure it works. But yeah, I mean, I guess you really don't know if it's good until people hear it. And it's kind of, you know, you do get that feedback, but you can't take all of it as like gospel. You kind of got to just feel it out. And, you know, if something doesn't work once, it doesn't mean it'll never work. It just, you're probably not doing it right. You can probably find a way to do it. So it's just like I said, you know, before, you can learn a lot from those shitty sets, and more often than not, you do.
Yeah, and I'd imagine like Twitter is a great resource for figuring out what jokes stick, what jokes are does. Like, have you ever utilized like the response that you gotten off of Twitter? Like, I didn't even really think this shit was funny, but motherfuckers are eating it up. Let me incorporate this. Or yeah, have you ever like look on the other end, throwing out some shit you knew was fire and it fell flat? Like, yeah, let me not put that in my routine.
Like, there's definitely a lot of that. And there's, you know, a lot of what I do on stage is a lot of just telling stories. So, you know, most of what I do on Twitter, besides, you know, being a terrorist and kicked off constantly, is, you know, tell silly stories about shit that happened. And usually from telling those stories, I can gauge whether or not those stories are interesting or funny or worth telling in a bigger setting. So, yeah, every once in a while, but your boy's been off the Twitter for goddamn 2 months now. So
I was gonna say, I know Tyler wants to ask you about being from Boston, but while we're talking about Twitter, I wanted to say, like, I actually, because you're on the Faded account though, right? So you still see the people that you want to see, but I feel like to an extent you're doing Twitter correctly. Like you're Kevin Durant with only a burner. Like, you don't have, like, assholes up your butt in your mentions all the time because you have 15,000 followers. You're just back on, like, a much more low level, but having built the career off of Twitter, right? Was this by design, or how the fuck did this happen?
No, I got in trouble again. I didn't even do anything this time. Dog, they got me on some bullshit.
How many times is this that you've been kicked off Twitter?
I've lost count. Some of the times I deserved it. This time I straight up didn't. All I did was ask a politician if she was a fucking idiot. And like that wasn't a threat. It was like a fair question, I thought. And they got me for that. And it's been an absolute nightmare. I can't get, like, we tried appealing it. Like, I had my manager try reaching out. He hasn't been able to do shit with it. So if any of your listeners or viewers will, you know, if they...
We can't help you, dog. It's not that podcast. I apologize. Break me out.
somebody break the kid out.
Yeah.
Dog, it's terrible. I might just have to start a new one, but I don't really like it there much anymore.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine starting a new Twitter account if I got like banned permanently. If I got banned permanently, like I would probably be like texting John and Mike, like, hey, tweet this out and say I said it. Well, like just about once a week or some shit. I cannot see myself building up another Twitter account if I got banned for real, bro.
I think by your analogy of Twitter, it would be like if you were addicted to smoking and then you went on vacation to a place with no cigarettes for a week. And then when you came back, you'd probably be like, let me just assume that was the universe telling me it's time.
Yeah, right? I really wasn't getting a whole lot out of it. The only thing that kind of sucks is it like completely fucks my like booking. Like a lot of these clubs look at what you have as a social media presence, and understandably so. And, you know, I'm going from having close to like 20,000 or whatever it was to fucking nothing, to not even having an account. It's kind of like, oh, well, how are you going to fill a club? I get it, but like, ugh. I don't know.
So you're from Boston. Mm-hmm. You're the only person on the internet who's from Boston that does not recklessly defend Boston against any and all attacks. And I know that is literally Tyler's favorite thing about you.
I was like, he's a Celtics fan who makes a lot of Celtics fans are fucking idiots. And that's what I love about
it. And when they are Boston's just racist, you're the only Celtics fan who's not like, everyone else is as racist as Boston is.
It's every city's racist. Sure. Is Boston doing it still pretty frequently? Yeah. Is it something that they should maybe take a look at? Yeah. Should every other team do that too? Yeah, probably. It's just like, they can't take any fucking criticism. I get it. You fucking don't want to do the work. It's fine. I fucking just shut up on Twitter then. Nobody wants to hear it. Yeah. Fucking bro, big babies.
How did you feel about the call to arms over the honor of Lucky, the leprechaun mascot,
Kyrie got exactly what he was looking for. Like, yeah, I mean, you can't, it's not like he did that by accident. He was trying to be a dickhead and he got a response. So they took the bait. They're idiots for taking the bait. They gave Kyrie exactly what he was looking for. People don't understand. Like, that's the thing about these fucking dumbasses is they get worked so easily. And if you're like, if you have just the like smallest amount of sense, you can get them riled up in the easiest ways. And it's just, they're dumb. And then, you know, people get duped by that Danny Ainge article where he was like, oh, we're going to go fight Kyrie. People were like, NBA writers
The Tyler Conway, very obvious fan fiction, like very obvious fan
so
fiction.
So obvious.
Like, and talking about kissing players on the mouth and shit.
It's just do a fucking ounce of thinking before you react. It's not, you don't have to be first to react. You can process something. You can look at it and go, does this seem like a real thing, a thing that I should react to? And a lot of them just go, yeah, absolutely. I got to do it right away before anybody else.
It's like you said, it's a work that they fell for because, of course, Kyrie was trying to be a dickhead, right? He was trying to be an asshole and rile people up. But now you're a 38-year-old grown man defending a cartoon leprechaun on the internet, right? Like, Kyrie was an asshole.
Sticker.
You're an idiot.
A sticker
assholes
of a cartoon
idiots in the grand scheme of things, right? It's way better to be an asshole than an idiot.
And it's you're being a baby. It's a fucking decal. It's a sticker. It's a fucking sticker on the floor. Shut the fuck up. Jesus fucking Christ. These people, like, they'll find the dumbest shit to get upset over instead of, like, genuine shit to get upset over. There's enough real shit to be mad about. It's not on the fucking center of the TD Garden.
It's not Lucky.
Lucky's a problem, but racism. That's
that's something we don't need to talk about right now. But let's talk about Lucky.
But you step on Lucky, you know what I mean? God,
well, it's anti-Irish hate crime, you know. Step it on the leprechaun.
All right, man. Our guy Mike, as we said, Faded Comedy LA coming back July 9th. Go get your tickets now and check out the show in Denver as well. But Mike, thank you. Good, best of luck with Twitter. And
I'm probably not coming back. I'll do other stuff.
And good
see
for
me
you.
Check me on Instagram, people. Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm posting pictures of my dogs and when I'm doing shows there. So it's much better. I barely share any opinions there. You'll love it.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate you.
All right. See you, fellas. Peace.
So you're a sports fan. That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can see the latest picks and articles from Action Network gambling experts, as well as personalities like Colin Cowherd. You can compare odds from different sports books and track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smart. Great time talking to Mike. Excited for him and everyone else. We talked about at the beginning of the show as well, just that as stuff is coming back, people like Mike, like, it's like their job and their livelihood and everything comes back too. So I'm happy for him. It was nice getting to catch up with him.
Sure. Shouts to Mike, man. I hope they bring you back to Twitter. If you escape the hellhole that is Twitter, I completely understand that too, if that's your out. But yeah, man, appreciate Mike hopping on for sure.
If they give him his Twitter account back, you think he'll just be fully face first back into it, right?
Absolutely.
It is an addiction or a compulsion for everyone who's still in it, I feel like.
You know, it's necessarily an addiction. Addiction more than a habit at this moment, right? Is there a distinction between the two? Because it's like, you know,
addiction is a physical dependency. Yeah. So that it's more of a compulsion or a habit for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Because I don't know if I'm necessarily addicted to music. I know that I like to listen to music when I work, when I fucking drive, you know, whenever, you know, I need music. And it's kind of like when I wake up, first thing I do is fucking, you know, relax for a minute, then check Twitter, check my minute, see what the fuck happened overnight. Check my feed and shit. So
Segway King, Segway King, Dragonfly Jones. Let's talk about the Tyler, the Creator album.
Yes.
I think Twitter is an addiction, though. I think niggas is addicted to that shit. I don't think it's, I think people love the interaction and or the likes and shit. And there's proof that engagement, you know, like chemically, we get like serotonin and shit or whatever.
But you could say the same thing about most forms of human interaction. Would you say you're addicted to getting hugs?
No, but I mean, that's not the same, bro. It's not, you know, that's not, that
it's
is
not the
same
because someone's not monetized it, but there are a lot of things we do.
We don't leave the house to get a hug. You know what I'm saying? You get on Twitter for that interaction. If you know what I'm saying? Like when that interaction dies, I imagine people would not get on Twitter anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you feel what I'm saying? You pick the phone up for that shit. So if that shit died down and the Twitter wasn't popping, people wouldn't pick up Twitter. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I think framing it as people seeking validation in Twitter might be, definitely has some merit. I'm not a dude who seeks validation, though. Like, I enjoy the jokes. I enjoy
being kept in
the
loop. You don't do that anywhere else in your life either.
I don't give a fuck if the people don't like me.
I don't think that's, I'm not framing it in that way at all. I don't think you're seeking validation. I think we all pick it up.
Well,
just for the interaction feeds us in a way.
But no, let me say this too. Tyler, you're not a normal person when it comes to not seeking validation either.
Yeah.
I mean, most people are seeking.
That's why I fully understand I'm different in that regard. Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk about the Tyler, the Creator album.
Fuck it.
A-O-T-Y.
Let's talk about it.
A-O-T-Y.
Let's talk about it.
You know what I mean? How y'all feel?
It's definitely an album of the year contender. It's between that and Mac Homme's Pray for Haiti for me, between the best two albums I've heard this year. Love that Mac Homme. But Tyler just, I am so impressed. Like, you heard me exalt. You heard me fucking exhale just now thinking about this album. Like, that's how much he impresses me. Like, you know, we talked before, and I love Tyler when he's pushing boundaries, but this album, he is just flat out rap. And doing it in such a creative way to let us know, yeah, I still can fucking, you know, get busy on the mic, but bringing in drama to you know, host it just as a nod to Gangsta Grillz and a nod to, you know, Pharrell's In My Mind, Gangsta Grillz, which is one of my favorite Gangsta Grillz tapes too. It was just, it's just so brilliant on every level. It's entertaining. You know, Pharrell, Tyler can rap his ass off. He's funny. He's witty. He's introspective. It's always a fun time. You're never bored listening to a Tyler.
Never. From his first album.
You never know where Tyler's going to take you on his verses, but wherever he's going to take you, you're going to be entertained and or blown away. And it's just, it's an amazing album. Like you said, album of the year contender for so far. Absolutely.
I love how he's just completely unafraid and even talks about it. And I mean, before I even heard the whole album, I was just like, you know, I'm like fucking five songs in, I'm like, this motherfucker is not afraid to go anywhere with his music. Like, he goes everywhere as if he's been there. You know what I mean? Right. For me, this album is a culmination of all of what Tyler has been. If you look at all of his albums, it has that same feel. Even Cherry Bomb, which I think is album that I really didn't enjoy as much, but there still has a certain, I think he figured that sound out on here with certain songs, you know what I mean? I didn't think he figured it out on Cherry Bomb, you know what I mean? Like, but what I think about when I hear this album is like, where the fuck does he go after this? Because we heard all of his albums and all he's done, you know what I'm saying, up until this point, and like, I just don't know where he goes after this. This album is perfect. He made like a Gangsta Grillz album in a way that was not annoying, where they didn't have I never once was annoyed hearing, they didn't run it back. There were some beautiful songs where, you know what I'm saying, he was yelling on that shit and it was still like perfectly placed in the song, you know what I mean? The beat switches, how open he was when he was talking about what he did. That fucking Wilshire shit is crazy as hell. What's wild to me about it's that is wild, like, man. Tyler, you're thinking about a chick that didn't even let you fuck, nigga. Bro, they used you, my
he's
guy.
Crying in the whip with
right.
Her.
Right. Y'all was crying in the whip, and you ain't even get a sniff the pussy dog. You feel me? Like, damn, nigga, she used you, my boy. You know what I mean? Didn't even know it. You feel me? But anyway, I love it. I love the album. I can't stop playing it. I played it from the first song to the last song, straight fucking through. I mean, it's I never saw Tyler coming here. I wonder if the next step is maybe this is what I'm thinking, but like, you know, just maybe he throws a little bit of Alchemist in there with him and creates with him and just goes further into his rap bag. Because like you said, this motherfucker was rapping with a capital fucking R, okay? He is one of the best rappingest rap motherfuckers out right now, in my opinion, based upon like the storytelling, the wordplay. It's beautiful. You know what I'm saying? And I love the fucking album. I'm obsessed with it. It's great. And it's crazy to see him get here. It's crazy to see his growth. I feel blessed to have seen where Tyler has come from to come here. You know what I'm saying? It's a great time to be alive. I love the album. I love this shit.
Yeah. It's Tyler is so unique because he's someone who is such a student of this shit, right? And he pays so much homage to the legends that inspired him while still, you know, seeking to, you know, progress and push rap further than his band. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the fucking DJ Drama Nod. Like, you know, he said, I was a 15-year-old kid loving drama mixtapes. I always wanted to get him to announce an album. And there's a moment on, I forget which track it is, but Tyler's talking about how he was plotting on trying to smash Justin Bieber. Did you hear that shit?
When
he said some shit back when I was trying to smash. Yeah, he said back when I was trying to smash Bieber, Justin. Y'all say it with, I say it with my chest out. Y'all say it with your chest in. And DJ Drama ad-lib, say it with your chest, nigga. And I was like, God damn, rap is here now? But DJ Drama is like hyping up bisexual lyrics, right? I love that moment.
It was tight. There was a particular lyric when he said, like they were talking about this dude was missing his chick. Mm-hmm. And he was like, tell your homie, you know, it ain't got to be like this. I'm down for the threesome. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you ain't got to miss her, bro. We can enjoy her together, dog. She with me, but you can be here too. I love that shit. But like, yeah, like, it's a beautiful place to be. This motherfucker is coming out here with, not even just bisexual, nigga. Like, this motherfucker wears vests and loafers, okay? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is Fonz. This is what people wanted Farnsworth Bentley to be. He is that. You know what I'm saying? With more creative juices. It's beautiful to see, bro. Like, I wonder who would you compare him to in the generation before? Is it Pharrell? Is it more like Pharrell where he might, because Pharrell didn't truly get, like, you know, he had some big, you know, songs and big moments, you know what I'm saying? But he didn't get the real love till later in his career.
Yeah.
Like, he, you know what I'm saying? Like, so what I mean, I think he's, you know, Tyler's huge, but, you know, he's a huge star, but he's not a, you know, that not the, he hasn't reached the superstardom that I think he could reach, you know, and Pharrell reached his in a later, you know, part of his career too. So I don't, who would you compare him to?
Yeah. For Pharrell was definitely his biggest inspiration. He says so himself, but it feels like you knew a Pharrell / Neptune speak when you heard it. You know what I'm saying? You knew what Pharrell's fingerprints were on when you heard it. There's no telling where Tyler takes us with every album.
Nope.
You know what I mean? So he's truly literally a one of one. That phrase might get overused, but there's only one Tyler in this rap shit. There's only one.
It started with a meeting the roach, bro. And look at where he's at now, bro. Right. You know what I mean?
Right, he ate a fucking cockroach and threw up. And now he's like one of the most envelope pushing artists in the whole fucking rap game.
Trying to take his friend's girls. He's come so far from meeting that roach, dog. Well, I mean, what's wild about that story is like, I know it was fun, right? I get it was fun, but like, what I wonder where did that connection come from? Being that he said he never, he's like, you know, he said he was on the surface because he was a new nigga and they was like, you know, they had roots. They was fucking, you know what I mean? Like, where does the fun come? Because in the moments that I've cried in some pussy, doing dirt, I was in the pussy.
You have actually cried during the act?
No. I have been fucking, and a chick was crying, riding it on some like, I'm going to miss this shit because it was, you know, niggas was flying too close to the sun when we was young, you feel me? And we had to cut it short because I didn't want to fuck up what I had, you feel me? But we don't reel it in. Niggas is, you know, moving.
The moment that
now.
The sun burnt the wings off of Icarus was right, a you feel moment me? Yeah. of perfect bittersweet clarity.
Right. So I've had those moments, you know what I mean? But I wonder where that could. Tyler's interesting in that way where like he's building these connections with people in like on some asexual shit. You know what I mean? Like he interests me in every way possible. Dude's dope.
Fucking Tyler Baudelaire.
Tyler Baudelaire. And bro, the visuals. I'm ready. I'm truly ready. He talked about scoring musicals and shit like that. I'm truly ready for a Tyler movie. Mm-hmm. I'm truly ready for that. Even if it's a short story, give me like 30 minutes. Give me 30, 40 minutes. I mean, in the promotions, he was leaning heavily into like, I won't even say Wes Anderson. That was further. That was like a French film. It felt like the people should be speaking in French. You know what I'm saying? Like, there should have been some, at least some French ad lib, you know, or captions in that motherfucker. It felt, you know, like, so yeah. I'm wondering what that would look like. And I would love to see that shit, man. But he's a creative genius, man. And whatever he does, you know, he never goes half speed with it. He jumps all the way and he's fearless. And that's the fucking type of creativity I want to experience. You know what I mean? Somebody who's gonna like, you know, you can tell, you can see, like you said, you see he pulls in a lot from different, you know, inspiration, you know, pulls in inspiration from a lot of different places, but it's always comes out as his own. Right. You know what I mean? Right. His own creation. So
right. He definitely uses the inspiration of those that he admired to guide him on his own unique path.
That's a Gangsta Grillz album we've never heard before. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he used that as inspiration, but it sounds like no other Gangsta Grillz album we ever heard. And I love it.
It's perfect.
Great. It's a mixtape. It's not a mixtape. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Good job, Tyler. Good job, Tyler. Jenkins and Jones. Three thumbs up.
Three fucking thumbs up.
John, Sydney McLaughlin just set a world record in the 400 hurdles with a 51.9 at USA Trials. It's going to be a fun Olympics for the USA track team.
Bro, I'm glad you said this, man. Probably an hour and a half before we got on here, I was thinking, I wonder if she's going to make the Olympics this year. I wonder if this is her year. And so I thought she
was. Gold medal favorite.
Yeah, I thought she was, but hey.
I'm going to just throw this out there because I'm a track and field guy. This year, there's not a lot of names that people will know going into the Olympics, but there are going to be some fucking stars on this USA track and field team this year, bro.
Sha'Carri, bro.
Sha'Carri already had that moment, but trust me, like Tara Davis, who is going in the long jump, Sydney McLaughlin should be like nationally famous by the end of Tokyo. You know what I mean?
What about the 200 meter runner? She seemed like a dog too.
Yeah. It's gonna be fun for sure. All right, that's all the time we have for today.
Shouts to the North Carolina A&T 4x400 team. Whole fucking squad made the Olympics.
There we go.
Let's go.
I love that, and I also love that. Like that does it because we get that. HBCUs get that, and mid majors like Long Beach State get that too, where you have people qualifying for other countries in the Olympics. I love it. Qualify for the Olympics any way you fucking can. Yeah, you get that little rings tat on your back shoulder. You know what I mean?
right.
For the rest of your fucking life.
Right.
My favorite correction as a journalist I've ever been issued was I introduced someone at an event as a former Olympian. And she went up and took the microphone and she said, with all due respect to Mike, there's no such thing as a former Olympian.
You're an Olympian forever.
And there I was like, go. God damn, that shit is crispy. Yeah. And now I know they all take that seriously.
Eyes water when you hear some shit like that. That's one. But Sha'Carri pointed at that fucking clock and saying, stop fucking playing with me. You know what I mean?
She's going to be the breakout star this summer.
She's been different. She was different in the NCAA. It's going to be really, really, really fun for sure for that team. I'm excited. All right. Maybe that's after basketball is over. We're going to be a track and field podcast.
Fuck yeah.
Hey, goddamn right. The women's soccer field team is fucking crazy this year, bro.
And not just talent, personalities.
Track athletes are never, that's the one sport. There are no Tim Duncans, there are no Kawhi Leonards in track and field, bro. None.
And you gotta, they're the best athletes in the world competing. You know what I mean? The arrogance you have to have to think you can be that. It's on a different level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like every track star's origin story is rooted in them being like a third grader who just wanted to talk shit after beating people in a race, right? Like, I feel like that's every track star's origin story, bro. Like, racing as an elementary kid talking shit.
Shakira been telling people to stop playing with her for fucking 15 years, nigga. Yeah.
Stop fucking playing with me, Susie. I'm fucking wrecking you, Jennifer Knapp.
You know what I mean? All right, man. That's our time. Thank you for sticking around. Thanks to Mike Malloy for joining us. Great talking to him. We will be back on Thursday with another episode. Enjoy the games until then. Be sure to subscribe to The Volume on YouTube. And tell all your friends to subscribe and download it and all that shit. And we'll see you guys later. Bye.
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 Bye.